This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon. You are listening to Health and Living. I'm Lee Chui Lin. The 2016 Thomas and Uber Cup took place in Kunshan, China this year. Unlike most badminton tournaments, this one sets itself apart as a team championship. The format means that there are up to 5 matches every round, 3 singles and 2 doubles, which calls for teamwork and collective strategy. But chances are you didn't need me to give you that introduction. You've probably played badminton at some point in your life. The popular game, which demands excellent fitness and technical finesse, is a popular after-work and weekend recreational sport to play or to watch. I'm learning more about the sport from consultant orthopedic surgeon Dr. Harjit Singh, and joining us is Dr. Muhammad Faizal Hassan, the Dean of Sports Science at the University of Malaya, who will be able to give unique insight into the sport at the elite and competitive level. Gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Yeah, good morning.
Good morning, thank you.
What are your views on badminton? Love it, hate it, love, hate it? Where do you land?
Well, okay, maybe let me start. I think on the medical point of view, I do get a lot of patients with badminton-related injuries of the shoulder, elbow, and also, in a way, I like it. Okay, but the game per se, I think it's quite a demanding game. And if you're not up to the mark, you tend to get injured easily. What do you think?
Okay. For me, in the psychological perspective in sport and sociological perspective as well, badminton is where you unite the whole Malaysian citizen as a nation. That is where it excites the people to support the country and then to encourage more younger athletes to get involved in sports as well.
So you like it, huh?
I like it, yeah, personally.
Probably plays it well.
Not an easy game to play well. Exactly. Is it a vehicle then to promote fitness and health among Malaysians, you think? That, you know, it's kind of a good starter game or an entry point because everyone plays badminton.
Yes, definitely. Because badminton is one of the sports that everybody can play badminton. And you can play anywhere, in front of your house, by the side of the road and whatever. It's not necessary for you to get a proper badminton hall for you in order for you to get involved in badminton. So it's the kind of sports that involves a bigger population compared to other sports like hockey, for example, maybe squash, which is more expensive, golf, and etc. Yep.
What are the physical demands of badminton? Having said that, you know, it's a good thing. What demands does it take on your body?
I think probably if you look at badminton as a game, being one of the most common games that we play, it is demanding at all stages of participation. That means you can have children playing the game right up to, you know, older adults. And at every stage, we have to understand that we will perform based on our age and capability. Now, if you try to partake in this game at a higher capacity than you actually can, you probably would get injured. So the usual dictum of warming up well and playing the game warm down using the correct attire and identifying injuries early is very, very important. And I think that's the way to stay safe.
Where do the injuries usually pop up when it comes to badminton players?
Well, I think that it depends on the intensity at which you play in. I mean, of course, you can have the freak accident of the ankle, knee or the lower back. But I think the brunt taken by this game is possibly at the shoulder and the ankle. So shoulder injuries are very common. Unfortunately, they manifest as an overuse injury. That means they come over a period of time, eminently preventable if caught early. But, you know, if you ignore it, then it tends to become a bigger injury. So I think the shoulders and the ankle with the knee is going to be the target organs.
So is there a typical or ideal physique for a badminton player?
Well, I don't think they are big. What do you think, Faizal? I think they're normally lanky.
Yeah, normally lanky. Yep.
They are lanky. They are very agile. They are fast. And
having said that, you do see a lot of people playing. I mean, if you go to any average badminton court and just look at the types of people who are playing, even the types of people who are fairly skilled at the game, you will see people who don't otherwise necessarily look fit. You know, you will see people of different shapes and sizes. So what is it that determines how good you might be or how able you are to play?
That's yours.
Because you could have very muscular people playing badminton. Yeah. You could have people who are slightly overweight playing badminton quite well. You know, it's not necessarily, we don't all have to look like Lee Chong Wei.
I will divide in three groups of people who plays badminton. The first one is the elite or the high performance badminton players. The other one is for fitness. And the third one is for leisure and recreational. So if you're talking about high performance, definitely the demand is very much higher in terms of physical, mental and psychological demands are much higher compared to the other two groups. While fitness is more on how they want to improve their own fitness, their health and so forth. And the other one is recreation. Recreational is the one that you can see the all shapes of people playing badminton. And then if you talk about the objective of how they involve in those three groups will be the demand in high performance is very much higher, of course, but as opposed to the recreational where they just want to get involved in the sport in terms of to fill up their free times and so forth. So these are the three groups that we can see the difference between one group to another in terms of how they join or play badminton.
Are there any particular stretches or conditioning exercises that would be good for people who like to play badminton often?
No, the way I look at it, you don't need a very specific warm-up protocol.
All shoulders.
Yeah, no. You actually need to do a general warm-up, yeah. Definitely. And that warm-up should be good enough to increase your heart rate and start you on a light sweat. Yeah. And then you can probably play the game. I think that is going to be a safe statement to say. Having said that, you also need a warm down. Now, a lot of the badminton courts have a coffee shop just beside it. So right after the game, going down and chit-chatting at the coffee shop is not going to be a good thing to do. And I think that all this has to be inculcated from the time that you are a young player.
Yep.
Yeah, I think the young player is the one that would necessarily, if educated well, would bring about a potential elite player.
Yes, definitely.
And probably now we have good young players.
Yeah.
We have one coming up, I think.
Go Jingwei.
When they get injured, yes, I as an orthopedic sports surgeon, we can manage them. But how do you manage the mind? I mean, I'm not supposed to ask questions here.
No, but, I'm happy for it.
Yeah, I mean, this is a young player doing very, very well.
Yeah.
And my take on this is that we have had young potential athletes just fizzling out. Yeah. So, I mean, you are the guru in this. So, how do we manage them?
Okay. One thing that I find out in Malaysia is the exposure of sports psychology and mental training to the athletes at a very young age is lacking.
Okay.
Which is, for me, is very essential for the athletes in the very young age, for the age of like 7 up to 12 years old to be exposed to sports psychology. That is where they can control their own mind in order for them to face the situation, which is very demanding and very competitive. I would like to speak about Go Jingwei, like Dr. Harji was saying just now. She's good, she's very young, but this is the stage where she needs somebody to strengthen her psychological background and strengthen her mind. In order for her to, like she's playing the Uber Cup, which is senior level
elite
international,
tournament.
Is very elite. So if she doesn't get a proper guidance in terms of sports psychological strength, then she might end up not playing badminton at a very early age. So these are the things that National Sports Council should look into to expose a young athlete at a very early stage. Requires a lot of support for the athletes rather than just expose her at a very young age, because she will tend to burn out at maybe like 20s, which is disaster for the country actually. Yeah.
Considering that there needs to be that mental and emotional support, how else do you transition from being either a recreational player or just a young player into being an elite player? How does the training structure change? What do you need to be doing in order to get there?
That's why we need very good coaches who can work together with sports psychologists or mental trainers. So the coaches will then implement a lot of psychological elements to the athletes. So the athletes will mature much younger compared to their age. And then at the same time, the mental strength will be stronger as he or she grows up. So these are the things that we are like at the moment in Malaysia. Yeah, compared to if you're looking at the Australian athletes, in their school itself, at a very young age of 7 to 8 years old, they're already exposed to sports psychology and how they can contain or control their own emotion during any physical activity.
Yeah, maybe I can add to that. Now, I see these athletes when they are injured. So you see them in a very different mindset. You see them as if this is the end of their life kind of mindset. Of course, we are more the carpenters of the field, the medical field. So we fix the injury. Now, sometimes we can fix the injury, but we struggle fixing the person. Because that's why sometimes if I get a good coach who is on the same page with me and understands the rehabilitative process, instead of being too pushy and the management wanting the player to go back earlier than the player should, and we don't seem to speak the same language, then I think the player suffers.
Yes, definitely.
Sometimes injuries don't get treated appropriately.
Yeah.
Because a lot of injuries sometimes do not require surgery. It just requires some rehabilitation, giving time for things to settle down, communicating this to both the patient, the coach, and you know, the parent.
The
I think is very, very important, particularly young budding athletes.
Yes, exactly.
I think that's important.
Yeah.
I'm speaking today with Dr. Harjit Singh, consultant orthopedic surgeon, and Dr. Muhammad Faisal Hassan, Dean of Sports Science at University Malaya. And we're talking about badminton today, in terms of its fitness, in terms of its risks, in terms of how you become an elite player, which is what we'll be talking about after this. You are listening today to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. You are listening to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture. I'm Lee Chui Lin. I'm in the studio with me for his monthly show, consultant orthopedic surgeon Dr. Harjit Singh. Also in the studio with us, Dr. Muhammad Faisal Hassan, Dean of Sports Science at the University of Malaya. We are talking about badminton today. So how does an elite player train? And how does it differ from other sports, for instance?
Okay, probably I just tell you about what I think an elite player should be doing. He should be at a optimal fitness level all the time. Probably in between tournaments, they tend to take a break and they drop a bit. But I think a lot of training should be at preventive strategies for injury also. Those are very, very important. Recently, I think there is a sports medicine candidate in UM who's doing research on how the shoulder functions in badminton, finding out that there are certain muscle groups which tend to be tighter in elite badminton players or potential elite players. And these potentially can give rise to injury. And the idea is he wants to communicate this to the coaches to set up a preventive stretching program. So I think prevention of injuries, we can't prevent all injuries, but I think preventive measures in elite athletes is very, very important. And I guess you would be able to tell us about how you prepare them otherwise.
So if you look at elite badminton players, we can see a lot of similarity between elite athletes and professional athletes. So for the elite athletes, they devote themselves about 24/7 per week, where most of the time sports is in their mind compared to normal athletes. So these are the things that, like what Dr. Harjit has said, the importance of elite athletes to know their responsibility as elite athletes and how the coaches coach the athlete as well. So if you have elite athletes but you don't have elite coaches, then there will be a breakdown between these two entities. So these are the things that the Badminton Association or even the National Sports Council must have a broad knowledge about how elite athletes work and how they want to go about it. Yeah.
We're coming to the section of the show where I want to talk a little bit more about injury. What are the common movements or techniques in badminton that would be of particular worry when it comes to injury? You know, we have our smash, we have all this footwork, we have stop and go.
Yeah, I think the best badminton players are the ones who have very, very good footwork. Yeah, surprisingly, I think it's that. If you have good footwork, your movement around the court is optimized.
Efficient,
then you
yeah.
reach,
Efficient.
Yeah, you reach the point earlier and you can place your shot. I think you get caught if you are not fast enough, and then the stroke that you play gives more stress to the shoulder joint. now. So whenever you do a drop shot, whether you do a lob, whatever you do a smash, if your technique is correct, then the movement at the shoulder and the wrist is optimized. Now, if that's not going to be the case, you might get injured either acutely, that means one particular smash gives rise to an injury of the biceps tendon or the rotator cuff, or you accumulate certain injuries, and as it goes on for a period of time, you start developing pain and your performance drops. So I think the start-stop nature of the game gives a lot of stress to the ankle and the knee. And it is always important that the footwear that you wear is appropriate for badminton. Yep. A lot of us just wear a running shoe and go and play badminton, and that's how we get injured. So these are probably the more recreational players. But I guess the elite athlete, if they are mindful about their technique of play and their footwork, I think they are quite safe.
Yeah, definitely.
How can we teach recreational players proper technique? Because I'm thinking back to when I, you know, was a kid playing badminton. I don't think anybody taught me. You know, you're just handed a racket and then you look at people and then you figure out, okay, so this is roughly how I play. You know, how do you get to the point where you are using the correct technique so that you're not hurting your shoulder if no one teaches you?
Yeah, I think previously we used to have just free play. That means, you know, you borrow a racket and you just start playing. But in all sports and even badminton, from a young age, you actually already have structured sports clinics where if you are interested in the game, it's not too expensive. You get proper coaches who are certified and they teach you the proper technique. I think that is the best way to learn the game. But we have to be mindful. When we have structure, sometimes we kill off interest.
Yeah.
So the goals when we are going to start people on sporting activities is that we teach them the right technique to prevent injuries, but we don't kill off the fun side of the game. And then in children, we don't have adult-based goals like, okay, now you have to win and this is how it's going to be. You know, the initial part is getting them hooked on to the game, and then they move into teenage years, they go into competitive badminton, then you don't have burnout and you prevent injuries at the same time. It's bad for business, but I guess that's a better way.
Do you see any injury patterns coming up in different playing styles? Because there are different types of players. You know, there are players who are more aggressive, more defensive. Are the injury patterns the same?
I think the gross injury patterns are the same because the essential and basic movements are the same. The only thing that differs is that the aggressive players tend to have more acute injuries.
Yeah.
Because they go in very fast and all out. So they get acute injuries. The rest get the whole spectrum of injuries anyway.
Coming to the new point scoring system, well, not new, but when it was put in place, it encourages speed, power and attacks. Firstly, did it affect their injury risks? Secondly, what does it do to the psychology of the game when you change its, I guess when you change in some ways how to win?
I think now sports becomes a spectator sport. The reason why you shorten the game is to make it more interesting for the spectators and
to
advertising.
More spectators, more advertising, and so on. But if you're talking about on the psychological perspective on the new system, definitely there's a good and there's a bad implication of that. But for me, most of the European countries, they would like more exciting games in sport. And then in order for them to encourage more participation among the European in badminton, so that is why they changed the system. If you look at now, Spain has a good badminton. World number two is from Spain. And then they have few more other good players from Germany, Russia and so forth. So once they change the system, they attract more players. But the negative side of that is when they change the system, they already on trial the system for few months before they expose it to the most of the Asian countries. That is why it took us about few months when they started the new system for the Malaysian players to get used to the system. But psychologically, it's good. That is where we have more younger players. But on the negative side is when the players get old, they tend to quit the competitive badminton. Yeah.
In tournaments, shuttlers play through the pain of an injury from an earlier match. How is pain management, how does it work for people who play in tournaments?
I think you always have a doctor on the court side, and you normally have a physio with you.
Physio.
So they normally assess the severity of injury. Sometimes you do get a minor injury, and you are at a crucial part of the tournament, and there is a collective decision to allow the player to continue playing. Probably, you know, by strapping the ankle or the part that's injured, and you allow him to go through the tournament. But we are very mindful in the sense that after that, you still work up the patient very, very well. But if you feel that the injury is severe enough to withdraw the patient, the player from the tournament, normally that's done. And I think we've seen that with Lee Chong Wei, and he's come back stronger. The only thing maybe I need to ask you, Dr. Faizal, is that we are very reliant on this one player.
Exactly.
Yeah, you speak of structure, that we have this whole structure of training and development. Where are we failing?
We fail in the system, actually, because we only concentrate on one particular player for a few years rather than try to bring up more players. For example, countries like England, they have few set of coaches and few set of players.
Even India. I think they are developing very well.
Even India and Thailand now. Thailand is going up very quickly compared to other countries in badminton. So these are the things that the system makes it quite difficult for us to produce young players, because it seems like we're only concentrating on Datuk Lee Chong Wei in order for him to win
to get the results.
What does that do to his mindset? I mean, if you know that going into any given tournament that you are going to be the great grand hope of our country, we really need you to beat all the Chinese players. You know, we, as a nation, we need you to do this for us. I mean, how does that affect his mindset, in your opinion?
Oh, actually, indirectly, we have put so much pressure on him. The whole nation wants him to win gold medal in Olympic, the first ever gold medal for Malaysia itself. But the problem is we don't know, or we don't really think about how we can help him in order for him to win the gold medal. For example, now he's playing in the Thomas Cup, and we expect him to produce results as well. So within these few weeks prior to the Olympics, I'm not sure if he can pick the moment where he's supposed to pick. Whereas most of the badminton players, for example, Lin Dan, Chen Long, they don't want to win small tournaments in order for them to perform in the Olympics. So these are the things that sports psychologists plays a very important role to work with the coaches in order for Datuk Lee Chong Wei to pick in the Olympics.
And in terms of his body, considering how much we rely on him, how long he's been playing, is it going to be a wreck in his older years? I mean, hopefully not, but...
Yeah, the way I look at it is that there is a reason why he's an elite player.
Yep.
I think the potential healing of the body is extremely good. If that wasn't the case, he would have fizzled out long time ago, given the amount that he plays. Now, he had a bad injury. It was fixed. He has come back even stronger. That says something about Lee Chong Wei. Of course, having said that, I think the intensity and the frequency at which he's playing, it doesn't really work towards that Olympic goal at this time. But we keep our fingers crossed. We've got Faizal and his coaches. The only thing is that probably the treating physician, the coach, the nutritionist, his masseuse, and the sports psychologists, they probably have to all speak the same lingo towards that one goal. If they don't, then I think it's a disaster waiting to happen.
You mentioned masseuse. How important is massage therapy and physio?
Oh, it is very important, of course, because one of the treatment for recovery, the best one would be massage. So that is where most of the athletes, they can recover within a few hours prior to the next match and so forth, which is very important, because it's not just physically recovered but mentally as well.
Because nowadays I think having a good sports masseuse prevents all the delayed muscle fatigue and allows the muscle to respond very, very fast and recover fast. And you know, the use of ice baths and other modalities while psychologically also working on the player. You know, he gets a time off, he gets to switch off, people are working on him. It's like he's our workhorse, and it's how you treat the horse. Exactly. It's going to give you the best results.
Discipline is another thing. For example, Dato' Lee Chen Wei, I think he's one of the most disciplined athletes that Malaysia has at the moment. Yeah, compared to other athletes.
That's no surprise at all.
Nicole David, don't forget Nicole David. Yeah.
And they're our two elites. I mean, they're the ones who are playing at the top of the game worldwide. So it makes sense that, you know, discipline is important. Also, Dr. Harjit, earlier you mentioned shoes being quite crucial. What about rackets? Does that make a difference?
Now, we have a lot of high-tech material nowadays. And the rackets, the material that we use for the rackets are becoming stiffer for more power. The way we string the guts, the configuration, they give you more power, they are more precise, but they come at a price. Now, they are stiffer, so they transfer a lot of the stress onto your elbows and the wrist. Yeah. So if you, in gaining power through your equipment, are going to suffer in the point of having injuries at the elbow and the wrist, and these are overuse injuries. So you never gain all the time. You can potentially lose something as you gain, but the materials are getting much more advanced. The ability for the racket to sacrifice the stroke point, the sweet spot, is also getting bigger. Yeah. So it makes it easier to play. Gone are the days where you used to use what? Carbon X8.
And we used to use the wooden record ones. As well.
So the technology is there, but it has to be appropriate use of the technology.
For a recreational player, we've been talking quite a lot about elite athletes, but for your average Wednesday night player who's been playing for a while and is starting to notice maybe a few aches and pains, when should you seek professional treatment? At what point do you have to give up the ghost and, you know, go see a doctor?
I think I would like to say all the time.
Yeah.
But I guess if you have a bit of an ache, which with rest over 24 hours settles down and it doesn't become worse as you continue to play, then I think you're quite safe. Look at the equipment that you use. Probably it's a new racket that you have bought, not appropriate for your use. Surprisingly, you don't need to buy the most expensive racket to actually be safe. There are a lot of even sporting manufacturers in Malaysia who are producing good badminton rackets, and surprisingly, a lot of them are for moi. So the thing is that you don't have to go straight gold standard, $1,000 stuff. You just get something. You're a recreational player. We do get caught up with advertising, but I think is that playing it properly is the goal.
What are the factors that would increase your injury risk? You know, when you're playing, when do you need to look in the mirror and say, okay, admittedly, I am this, this, and this, and maybe that puts me more at risk?
Okay, I think we look at it in two facets. One is the intensity at which you play. So elite players who don't have a play-rest cycle which is optimum will get injured. Now, group two is the recreational players. If you play maybe once in 2 weeks, and when you play, you try to play and mimic Lee Chong Wei, you will get injured. So both groups actually get injured. It's just that the mechanics are different.
Do I need to worry if I am of a certain age or a certain weight, or if I'm properly conditioned, I've warmed up, I warmed down, I'm more or less all right?
Okay, the thing is, nowadays we always ask most players who are starting up, especially if they cross 40, to get a pre-participation evaluation. Just make sure that...
Talk about killing the fun.
Yeah. I mean, you just want to know what's the base that you should start on.
Exactly.
To be safe. You might have a heart condition and, you know, you don't want that to manifest on the badminton court because that makes news and it's bad. People don't play badminton after that. But I think if you know and you start and play appropriately with people of the same level, and then as you get better, you progress on. I think that would be the safest way. Of course, in any sport, being optimum weight and functional level is very, very important. If you're overweight, you are definitely going to be at a higher risk of injury. Yeah. I think age-wise is just a number. If you have been active in a particular sport and as you age on, you play, you are safe because you will also be the group that's mindful of your capability and you will tailor it to that.
So to sum up then, what would you say are sort of the key bullet points you'd like people to take away about playing badminton safely?
I think badminton is a good game to play because you can play it at any time. Okay. The idea is to play it safe so that you can play for the longest time possible. And you can do that by getting the technique correct from the word go, using the appropriate attire and playing to the level that you are comfortable with. The third thing would be that if you are injured, get treatment, appropriate treatment as fast as possible.
And Dr. Faisal, my last question for you would be, you know, what do you think we need to win that gold? Because that's what we all want. Yeah,
I like that.
Yeah, no, I know.
And you're on radio.
Yes, I'm putting pressure on you. But yeah, what do we need to do?
He's blushing.
Well, not just from badminton. You know, badminton's our great hope. Yeah. But in general, what do we need to be doing to get to that point for our elite athletes to be competing at the level where we can expect an Olympic gold?
Okay, if you're speaking on getting the first Olympic gold for Malaysia, yes, definitely we don't have to rely on badminton, on Dato' Lee Chong Wei. But we should look on other athletes as well. We have good divers there. For example, we have Pandalela Rinung, who at the moment she's at her best. Okay, and then we have to look into our archer as well. So we're going to have one or two athletes for archery. And then one more will be in sailing, I think. So we have few prospect of medals there. So if you are speaking about gold, I think I don't put my money on badminton alone. But I will consider diving as one of the prospect of gold medal from Malaysia as well. But how we're going to achieve it, which is very important. For example, if you look at other countries, they assign sport physiologists, they assign good coaches, they assign mental trainers for their team. So that is where Malaysia should have as well. So we have only about 12 athletes who are going to the Olympics. Then we should have at least half of the number of athletes for the sports psychologists in supporting the athletes to win medals there. But the only setback in Malaysia is they don't really think about working with the mental trainers and sports psychologists, which is quite a negative side. If you're talking about other, for example, that's like I spoke to you earlier, a professional player, she has about 3 sports psychologists in order to strengthen her mind. So these are the things that are small things but can produce a very big result for Malaysia to achieve our first gold in Olympics. Yeah.
Thank you both very much for coming in today.
You're welcome.
I've been speaking with Dr. Harjit Singh, consultant orthopedic surgeon, and Dr. Muhammad Faisal Hassan, Dean of Sports Science from University of Malaya. We've been talking about badminton today, and you've been listening to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.